Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, man, the beginning every time.
Hey, there we go.
You see that? So I don't know. So hopefully, hopefully our guy can hear us now. I don't know what even to say about that because I unmuted us as soon as we started, and visually, it's all saying that we are good to go. But
PWT talks technology problems.
Saying that you're gonna get someone and it's gonna be so good that they're not even gonna know that they've been gotten is some real. Neil Flynn janitor stuff coming from a guy who doesn't like scrubs.
Right. It could also be the slap bet. You don't know when the slap's coming
okay.
from How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother.
But I'll slap you at some point, Nate. So be ready for that.
I'll be ready.
I haven't decided when that's going to be. Our main event was Dexter Lumis. I was going to say challenging, not challenging, but facing Adam Cole in a non-title match. Lots of moving parts here. So Lumis has been a thorn in the side of Undisputed Era in that they keep beating him in the ring, but they're scared of him. But he's 0-2 against him. He's lost to Roddy, and now he's lost to Cole. So don't know what exactly is going to happen here, but we'll have to find out a little bit later. So. Lumis and Cole, main event, and we got Velveteen Dream. I didn't know if we'd see him this week. I really didn't. So he showed up to even the odds, and then everybody was gone except for Adam Cole, and Adam Cole was ominously met by Scarlett, who brought an hourglass to show that it's his turn in Pictionary. So Karrion Kross is going to face Adam Cole at some point. Didn't see this coming. Thought that Cross was going to kind of stay away from the championship for a while, but he's doing what truly in kayfabe he should be doing after decimating the top guy in 6.5 minutes. It's going to be Cole and Lumis. Kevin Catani emails, "Salutations, gents. I trust, if you want to email us, that's pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. You want to call us in the future, 515-605-9345. Catani says, "I trust this email finds you well. I thought this was a great post-takeover show. Kelly got Dakota and Grimes. Finn looked great, and I thought Dexter Lumis held his own against the champ. Tom got his Phantasma turn, and Nate got a Shirai title, and then fun hook at the end of the show. Can't ask for much more than that. Well, I'm sure all of you, and Darrell more than likely, will cover the Cruiserweight storyline. What do you all make of the title picture now that Yui, Lumis, Dream, and now Cross, with Ciampa somewhere in the wings, I imagine, are all intertwined? How does this play out over the next few weeks? Thanks, as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. I'll tell you what, Catani, the Phantasma turn and EO winning, those were both things for me, too. I mean, that was very – I was on board for all that. There's a lot going on here. Nate, let's start with you.
So,
shut up, Nate.
Let's
start with you.
Oh.
Oh, see, now I feel bad. I feel like I should let Nate go.
No, I
you know what? That was
not have it.
That was deserved. That was deserved.
Okay. I wasn't as high on the show overall, and what a place to start than with, what better place to start than with Dexter Lumis in the main event. There's a recipe for ratings, but they tried to build it up throughout the night. And, has NXT ever done Hocus Pocus, like Undertaker, Bray Wyatt kind of stuff? Even when Bray Wyatt was in NXT, I don't think we got any Hocus Pocus stuff, and they tried to get around it by having Morrow point out that he could also see Dexter Lumis, but this was just gratingly stupid that they were trying to do a thing where Squeak from Basketball Roddy could see Dexter Lumis and Adam Cole and Bobby Fish couldn't. I know that Sam Shaw is a caricature artist, but that is completely incongruous with the admittedly undefined character that he's trying to portray. He doesn't do anything for me in the ring because there are absolutely no clues as to what might be going on in his mind. He's just a complete blank slate, and his ring work does not add to the character. So that's a big snore for me. And they had me real worried for a minute there that this was all just a bridge to continue the Dream feud, further evidencing that if they were going to continue to keep Cross away from the title, that there's nobody else for Cole to work with that would feel fresh. But like we said on the In Your House post show, I feel that Cross has already done enough that putting him in the title picture now wouldn't feel too soon. It's a little Kevin Owens-esque, even though the act is very, very different. I will say one thing I didn't like here. For all the cons that I had against wrestlers as an audience right out of the gate, one of the pros that I noted was that the wrestlers seem to have been instructed not to chant. But tonight, not only did we get the worst chant ever with "You Deserve It" during Phantasma's promo, or I guess it was during Maverick's promo, but we also got a second instance of wrestlers chanting for Cross, seemingly just because his act is cool, and that takes away from the character that he's portraying.
We also got a 10 more times chant. That was interesting.
That aside, though, I do continue to like how NXT is taking advantage. You know, as much as I criticize the Dexter Lumis thing, I like that they are taking advantage of pre-taping in this way to make Scarlett and Cross's theatrics look more cinematic. Some of the compositions here just look like they were straight out of a Raul Ruiz film. And furthermore, Cross's TikTok thing does marry perfectly to what they're emphasizing with the duration of Cole's title reign. The question is, again, something that we talked about on the In Your House post show, who is the babyface and who's the heel? Building sympathy against the far more dominant Cross could be a perfect way to finally turn Cole here.
Yeah, and I thought that's just about all you can do. It doesn't seem like you want to turn Cross here this quickly, unless you really just only ever had him heel because you wanted him to start off with a bang by beating Ciampa. But then right. What a potentially damaging thing to do. And if you do that, then do you have to turn Ciampa heel again? Because Ciampa's obviously going to want a return match eventually. Like, today on this show, they set him up to take a while, maybe away. Like they wrote him off if they want him to not even be on the show for a couple of weeks. So which I'd be in favor of because it's soul searching time for old Ciampa. And so I don't know where he goes from here, but I was just stunned by the end. I shouldn't have been because Cross was the only major talent that didn't seemingly get used on a pretty efficient show. Not the only one, but the only one who'd be there in that main event spot. But what an ending. I will say about the first thing with Lumis and Roddy, those camera shots were a real cheat. Like to show us Lumis and then to look from the side and not have him be there. I'm like, that's not a thing. No. You can't do that. Like you can do... Show him, like, move. I don't know how I would have wanted it, but that was a real cheat. The other stuff I at least could see Lumis doing.
Right.
But those were a real cheat. Yeah, I have liked that they're taking an unlikely person and putting them in a main event slot, but it's time to scale back Lumis and just have him feud with Roddy and Fish for a bit, and maybe he gets back to Cole, but see what happens here. Got a few weeks out of this, and now we're moving in totally different direction. Nate, I promise I will try not to do it again, but no promises. Go ahead.
I'm expecting it. I kind of agree with you guys, like some of the hocus pocus type of stuff with the Lumis act there. I like it was definitely the camera angles and the camera cuts that you guys were just talking about too, that kind of created that effect. And I think that is the one part of it I could have done without. Like you said, there could have been a different way to shoot it, or you could see Dexter like ducking down real quick, you know, so that way Adam Cole and Fish didn't actually see him, something along those lines. But other than that, like, you know, him showing up like behind the window of that door, or, you know, just other places throughout the night, all of that stuff I could get behind. And I kind of enjoyed, because it was kind of that like torturing type of a scenario. My question is what happened to Roddy that didn't happen to Fish? Because they were both kidnapped. Roddy just came out of it a lot rougher. And, you know, hey, I don't know. I'm just curious. I'm wondering. But other than that, the Dexter Lumis match, I liked the match. I personally, I'm a little bit higher on Lumis, I think, than you guys are. But I also wonder where he goes from here. You can only go so far with this kind of stoic monster type character. And I don't feel like it's a main event level character as of yet. Like you guys just said, I appreciate the fact that they're kind of toying with somebody that maybe not shouldn't be there, put them up in the main event scene, see what happens. Especially where they are in control of the crowd right now, they aren't going to get a natural rejection from the crowd. So this is definitely the time to try things, and I've been enjoying it, but I do wonder, you know, where he goes from here. I think it is time for him to kind of step back and feud like with Roddy and with Fish, and kind of leave Cole alone, which it kind of seems like that is where we're going with Karrion Kross coming into the picture tonight, which is something we did talk about. Tom and I talked about Wrestling Night America on Sunday. Karrion Kross, I don't mind him going, you know, kind of getting hotshotted straight for the title here. He comes in with the name value. He's got the act, just the push he's been getting. The fact that he just got that really strong win over Ciampa, all of that makes sense. I kind of, in a way, wish that they maybe had him get one more strong win under his belt. The first name that comes to mind is like somebody like Finn Balor. But you know, maybe not necessarily Balor. I don't know off the top of my head, maybe Gargano, but just get another solid win under his belt, then go to the title. But that's really neither here nor there. I'm still okay with that. I'm still looking forward to seeing where they go with it. But I'm curious to see if Ciampa does end up coming back into this mix, if he ends up costing Kross the title and we ended up, seeing a bit of more of a feud between Kross and Ciampa. There's a lot of different ways they can go with this, and I haven't quite thought my way through it to see which way I think they're going to go yet. But there's just a lot of different ways they could go. So I'm looking forward to it.
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but costing Kross that title is an option, but that is an option if they really want to do the double turn, because even if he's not supposed to be the heel, he's not. Nobody is Teflon at this point. Like, nobody is Hulk Hogan 1986 anymore. You're going to get booed. Hogan wasn't even Hogan anymore in 92 when he yanked Sid out of the Royal Rumble for... I'm sorry, guys. I'm very old. So that is our main event mess. And it'll be very interesting to see where that heads. You can call us at 515-605-9345. We're going to go to the phone lines, and we are going to ask Darrell from Georgia what he thought of tonight's show.
How are you guys doing? Is it safe to talk on you guys' show tonight? It seems like Triple H got somebody tapped on y'all phone line and be listening to everything you guys are saying.
big brother's listening.
Right.
Well, it was an okay show. It looks like they're starting to build to some places. Just to speak on what you guys, that main avenger that you were talking about, I like that they write off Ciampa, and next time he comes back, it's the land of Karrion Kross, and now he has to work his way back up to the title, because they showed a lot of different things with Keith Lee looking at the title, So that could be a setup. Even if Adam Cole loses, that could be a setup for next challenger for Karrion Kross. They also set up for a Keith Lee versus Finn Balor match, which what I will get to will be my first question to you guys. Tonight we had Keith Lee and Mia Yim versus Johnny Gargano and the pint-sized poison. And Johnny got the win over Keith Lee, but this also came with Cameron Grimes and Finn Balor. Then after that match, Finn called out Keith Lee. And he said, once you're done with that little situation that you have, come holler at me. So I think that they're going to have a TV feud between Johnny and let Keith Lee go past that and potentially move on to Finn Balor versus Keith Lee at that August the 22nd takeover that's unnamed right now, but they got on the list. What do you guys think about that, and how did you feel about that match?
I love that they're setting up a lot of challengers for a lot of belts, and I would not be overly shocked if we were working towards a multi-man match just because of the large number of people involved who want a shot and who are seemingly going after championships. Like each championship had one specific person who seemingly made their presence known, made their intentions known. But I wouldn't be shocked to see this go in any number of directions right now. Okay, so we had a lot of segments that were just to set future things up today, and this is as good a time as any to say this show only had 39 minutes bell to bell, and that's counting the commercial breaks. That's the lowest. I believe that's the lowest in all of the USA era. I think it's the lowest, and other than the one that was just the prime target for the whole show. The opening match, Lee and Yim versus Gargano and LeRae with Johnny pinning Keith Lee. This went 10:47. But now we got Keith Lee saying he wants that championship. We got Finn going after Keith. So where does Johnny fit in? I think that's a great question. Part of me almost wants to say Johnny won his feud, or at least got his win back over Keith Lee, and now he's not going to be figured in anymore. They're just going to go their separate ways, which would be weird. And then I would also say about this match, I had a lot of fun with the intergender action that we had. Most of the in-ring fun tonight came from this match, and in-ring surprises for sure. And then we got Weekend at Bernie's at the end with Johnny Gargano holding up his wife to pretend she was celebrating when she was essentially knocked out. I was sure she was going to break character, but she did not. So kudos, Candace. You might have had that inward smile going on, but you didn't break. On the opener, Tom.
So, in theory, I like the idea of wrestlers in a promotion wanting to challenge for titles and talking about it. But that's just not how WWE operates. They only focus on who is actually going to be the challenger. So when you have Keith Lee saying before he even goes out to a match that he should be taking seriously, I'm coming for that title, Adam. When you have him say that and then lose and then get challenged by Balor later in the show, it just seems messy. And it did occur to me after so many of these challenges got piled on that, yeah, maybe they are building to some kind of multi-man thing. It just came across to me as messy, and I would prefer things to be clearer. Or maybe ask me in a couple of weeks and this is a new direction. You know, I try to be forgiving because maybe they're trying to implement that into the show and make it seem a little bit more realistic. But, you know, every time I say that a couple of weeks later, it hasn't changed and my opinion stands. The match itself, I feel like they should have promoted this more heavily. I mean, they focused on the crossover match of Balor Grimes and the main event. And that, you know, that makes logical sense. But since, you know, you have Beth saying like, oh, we've been waiting for this for so long. I'm like, no, we haven't. We just got it last week. Yeah, it didn't last very long, and it was a bit of a schmoz. But this is not something we're particularly anticipating anymore, or something that we even thought was coming. So I feel like it would have been easier to get into if it was something I knew to anticipate. That said, I often criticize Keith Lee matches of being too house showy and being too cartoony and goofy, and not putting over his opponents as serious threats. They seem more like Wile E. Coyote when they're up against him. And I usually think that over the course of the match, and then by the end, I'm like, you know what? I actually had a lot of fun with that. That worked. This time it did not. I enjoyed the intergender spots, and of course I praise the intergender thing because I wish that intergender wrestling was more of a thing. I've been a proponent of that. But apart from some cool spots of like Mia Yim kicking Johnny's ass, the rest of it just felt way too goofy and like it was really defining Johnny and Candace's new act down. So I did not care for that aspect of it.
Yeah, it was really weird that they had three big matches tonight, and the one they didn't promote was the one that is the longest ongoing story. That is very odd. To the point where I thought this could be another 3.5 minute schmoz that leads to something later. Now, it was no less a schmoz. It was goofy. But it actually got a lot of time. I'm torn on some of it. I do want to see how Candace responds to the fact that Johnny planted the largest person in the brand on top of her accidentally. But it's way too early to have dissension between them, I would think. But I don't know. You can never tell with Johnny. Nate, on the opening segments.
That's really the biggest thing I'm looking forward to is seeing seeing what Candace's reaction is, because it basically looked like again he left his wife out to dry. Kind of got similar vibe last week when he was kind of just hanging out outside the ring, and Candace was in the ring getting her ass kicked by Yim and Lee. So. This is kind of second week now. I'm wondering if this becomes a thing, becomes ascension in the ranks or what, I don't know, but it's a second week in a row. We've seen something like that out of Gargano. So, curious to see where that goes. I definitely enjoyed the intergender spots, the match as well. Also a proponent for intergender wrestling. I definitely all for it. I've seen some amazing intergender matches, locally here, in the New England area. So definitely for that. And I it was cool just to kind of see LeRae and Lee mix it up just with the size difference there, Yim and Gargano, starting to exchange blows a little bit. It's cool. It's just something you don't normally see on NXT or WWE TV for that matter. They did it in such a way where it wasn't like they went full bore into it. It was kind of like almost like dipping their toe in the water a little bit to see what the reaction is or what, I don't know. But, I definitely, definitely enjoyed that aspect of it as well. It is a little strange to me that, we've got so many different stories intertwining right now, and I'm not sure where that's going to where that's going to leave Gargano right now, because Lee later on in the night said he wanted to challenge Cole for his title. We've got a whole bunch of people. We had Balor saying he wants to challenge for the North American title. So we've got all these different gears in motion right now. It does almost seem like Gargano is almost, cast aside. I was going to say an afterthought, but cast aside. I don't know. I don't obviously think he's going to allow that to happen, kayfabe-wise anyway. I think there's obviously going to still be something for Gargano and Candace in the coming weeks. I'm not really sure what it is. Just like I said, with all the different gears in motion right now for different challengers or all these different titles and all these different stories intertwining, I'm not sure exactly where he's going to fit in. So we'll see.
All right, Darrell, what else have you got?
Okay. And just to say, like I said, they have a I guess the next pay-per-view is August the 22nd. So that's like 10 weeks away. So I think a lot of these feuds, if we just think about it, they're going to need some stuff to main event TV, especially when you have Fyter Fest going 2 weeks in a row. A couple of these feuds that won't probably
I forgot about this. Yes.
Blow off, will blow off then. That's why you'll probably have the Johnny and Keith blow off, then start working towards Keith and Finn and have some of the stuff. And hopefully, my hope, they keep Tommaso Ciampa off until Karrion Kross wins the title, and then you bring him back. Because probably then you'll probably have a small section of fans, since I think New Japan will be having a small section of fans back early July. So you would think they'll be thinking about that and try to get some fans in there with them by the time that TakeOver SummerSlam weekend comes. So hopefully we see that. Now, my second question for you guys will be about the Cruiserweight reveal and everything that they have. I like that they going right back to it and having Drake Maverick come out there and say that he could beat him as long as it didn't. And I like that he Phantasma pulled off the mask and came up with the Escobar like he's a drug kingpin or something. But they had him kidnapping people like that. So I understand. I like that he spoke English when he said what he said. So I'm loving the reveal. I'm loving the story. I feel like this builds that NXT Cruiserweight title up. To me right now, it'd probably be just because of the story content that they put behind it is better than the North American title. Probably be a little bit higher in priority. And hopefully they keep dragging this story along where you, because Drake Maverick is such a good seller, you can have him getting beat on. And then maybe 2 weeks from now, you get the help of Jake Atlas and Kushida to help him out to even the odds. And they don't touch until that TakeOver weekend or if you want to have a big match or whatever. Because I want to put this caveat out there. The ban was lifted on the UK as of today. So they can travel from here to America and back from to the UK. So you got Jordan Devlin coming up. Hopefully you build this up, Drake Maverick win, then you get that. Shocking, that horrible face, that horrible man, Devlin coming in and ruining his party again, and you keep this story with the NXT title going. How do you guys like everything that happened in this story with the NXT Cruiserweight title?
I love everything about the way that this story was told, except for the name Santos Escobar.
Yeah.
I like everything else. It's just too obvious.
Yep.
It is Dexter Lumacy in its obviousness. It's funny because Tom and I were like joking for weeks, like, well, at least he's not going to be Jorge Bali. And they found something that's quite a bit dumber. Loved the reveal. Love how it was done. I thought the announcers kind of sounded like buffoons for not realizing that it was Wild and Mendoza under those masks. Like who else would it have been? It's just obvious. So we had that, but then the question is who were the previous luchadors that took them away? Because they were taken away by like dual luchadors before. At any rate,
it was Edging Christian.
Right, which is what I said. I was like, it was the Conquistadors, but who knows which Conquistadors? I dug this. I'm glad that this got its own separate week. This would have been too much to try to throw on the end of the show the previous week, so it made sense that they held on. I loved that they revealed, and then they showed he's bilingual. He can just spit it out now and do it as he wants. Hopefully he gets rid of that awful generic music and there's something different. I would have to assume that's the plan. I dug the way this went. I was sitting here looking at my notes for a match to talk about, but there is no match to talk about. And a lot of people could be waiting in the wings for this. We got Atlas as the friend. We've got Kushida, who he kind of bumped up against this thing with the Luchadors at one point, and then we got Swerve, who was the only one who actually has beaten Phantasma in the company. Well, I say Phantasma, Escobar in the company to this point. So it seemed like there was one other thing I wanted to jump off of there, but I'll throw to Tom and hopefully I will remember what that is.
Yeah, and at least with Dexter and Loomis, you're referencing fictional people. The Loomis one not even being a fictional character who kills people, but with Escobar, you're directly referencing a real life drug kingpin who I never watched the miniseries. I'm not particularly familiar with him outside of the fact that he was a very prolific drug lord named Escobar, but I'm sure that he has many, many deaths at his hands. Not personally, but, you know, not to go too far down that rabbit hole. It's just like, you know, when you say the name, that's who you think of. It's not like, oh, Apollo Crews. Okay, I think of Apollo Creed and Terry Crews. Way too on the nose. I see what you did there, WWE, but at least it's not a real-life negative connotation like that. The segment in and of itself was very well done, and the fact that you had the Luchadors closing in on the two most suspected possible leaders of the Luchadors definitely had it to where like either of them could have revealed themselves, and it might have made even more sense for Maverick to reveal in this one situation because the Luchadors followed him down after he surprise interrupted Phantasma's or Escobar's segment here. But so that was all good, and I like that Maverick is trying to get another match here, because even though he didn't say this outright, of course, he got screwed out of the win by the distraction finish, and it would make sense that he would honorably try to go after this. Another thing that makes it work so well is that he's the biggest babyface in the cruiserweight division right now, so turning against him makes the turn that much more effective. The conflict I have is that they didn't do this at a climax. They just did it on a regular TV segment, nothing that was built up to. And I understand, exactly like you said, Kelly, you could not have done this last week because of the Maverick situation and the re-signing. It would have been way too much to throw into that one pot. But I feel like you could have just ridden the new cruiserweight champion thing for a little while, the new interim cruiserweight champion thing for a little while, even if just for a couple weeks, to build to something else that was going to be promoted and advertised, perhaps a Maverick Phantasma rematch, something that would have felt like a bit more of a climax. So I don't know. Ultimately, with all the nitpicking and complaining and whatnot, I'm ultimately happy that we finally got this, and I'm excited to see where it goes. I agree. There are lots of other people that you can insert into this, and I told you he was handsome.
Oh, the other thing that I was going to say, it just hit me when Darrell brought up Devlin. I think, I don't want to say funniest, not funny, haha, but the funniest thing you could do to Drake is you establish as, like, build up Devlin as the little creepy bastard he is, and have him do a couple of videos about coming back, and have him be like, I didn't lose the championship, so yeah, I get that you've got your champion over there. But he basically talks himself into a Money in the Bank situation where he can challenge any time. And then, of course, he's already got it in his mind to do that right after a match, to steal that. And if you steal it from Drake Maverick, that is like the ultimate heel move. So it could be a move like that. Just spitballing here, but you know they listen, so you know what's going to happen. Nate, Cruiserweights.
You know, I like that idea, because I was thinking, well, along the same lines as Tom going into this, like, they didn't do this at a climax or anything. It was just, you know, Phantasma comes out to kind of celebrate his win or address the crowd. We didn't even really get a good idea of why he was out there other than, you know, probably just say, hey, I won the Cruiserweight title and yada, yada. Obviously, you know, Maverick came right out, then everything happened and then we get the reveal and the turn. Yeah, I feel like it could have gone something. I really like what you just outlined, Kelly. It's actually, I think I like that better than what I was thinking, which, you know, was kind of, you know, like actually, like what Tom said, you know, you kind of roll with the cruiserweight champion in the Phantasma form as he was, and, you know, give him that match against Maverick and make it look like Maverick's just about to win. And at the last minute, you know, you had you have the two masked luchadors come in, cost him the title, you know, and you get the reveal. Then you get all the heat on Santo Escobar at that point. So I was like, again, kind of just to parrot what Tom said, it's like, I'm glad we're here because this is where we thought we were going to be going with this for a long time. It's cool to be right about it. And it's, you know, I'm glad to see where it goes. It's like, I've been kind of wondering, you know, and kind of almost fantasy booking a little bit in my head, like where this might go. But at the same time, I kind of feel like they could have gotten a lot more out of this and put a lot more heat on Santo Escobar, you know, right out of the gate if they did it, you know, next week. Maybe he's like, yeah, next week we'll give you your rematch. And that's when all of that went down. Yeah, I feel like it might have worked a little bit better. But again, you know, here we are. We're here. And I'm actually really excited to see where this goes. It's like, you know, I've said it before, I'm a big fan of stables. Looks like this is just a three-man stable unless we end up getting two other people, those two original masked luchadors that did the original kidnappings of you know, Wild and Mendoza. So you will see, but I'm a big fan of stables. So I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, where they go with that stable. I also agree with Darrell. This is probably the most important the cruiserweight title has felt in a long time. I don't necessarily know if it feels to me higher than the North American title. Cause I, at least with Keith Lee holding it right now, and Lee just being Keith Lee, in my eyes, he's kind of, you know, one of the main guys in NXT. I feel like that is the title that, you know, holds the more of the prestige, which it should anyway. But seriously though, cruiserweight title is like right there, right below it, and it's the most I've cared about the cruiserweight title in a long time. So I feel like that's saying a lot about what that tournament just did for the title, and hopefully Santo Escobar can do it justice.
And a quick Google search says that Pablo Escobar was in part responsible for Colombia being the murder capital of the world in 91 mm-hmm. and 92.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the name. Not a big fan.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to do something, be the best at it. That was his deal. Capital of the world. Wow. Oh, boy. Okay, so, yeah, Cruiserweight Championship in a really good place. Darrell, what else do you have?
Yeah. And just to say, I just feel like Escobar, crazy saying that name, but he's just fit for the story right now and just like a definition of a transitional champion. And I see they put the interim back in front of the name of it. So you can tell that he's just right now a bump in the story that they're trying to tell that will potentially be Jordan Devlin, who, when he has the title, and like you say, Kelly, he's so squirming with it. But he goes in the ring. When you look at the other two champions that they have right now, he could go with any of them, and his work in the ring is just as good as those champions. So, and like you say, you're building – I think this is a story to continue to build Drake Maverick up as the ultimate babyface right now, and probably the number one babyface in all of NXT. Next to maybe Finn Balor. So I'm just loving, if it's not the top title, it's the best storytelling title out of all the titles in all of WWE, to be quite frankly. But I enjoyed that. My third thing with you guys would be, I love the video what they did with Io Shirai and how they continue to build her up. I like the segment with Rhea Ripley and I don't know what they got Robert Stone doing, but it's like he's breaking down and stuff like that. I would love to see where this goes. But I'm liking that, and I'm wondering where they would go with next challenges, because you can see Candice probably going to be suited up, and I don't know if they're building up Dakota Kai to maybe be a TV challenger or something like that. But I'm want to see where they're going to go with the women's division right now. What do you guys think?
Yeah, so that's – I with EO, man, it's been a heavy, heavy 7 or 8 day push. As we talked about a week ago on this show, her segments were first and last during Prime Target. They were by far the most expensively produced, the best produced. I don't know if they were more expensive, but they were the best looking. Yeah, real great stuff there. And she got all kinds of big pump up moments during In Your House. The crowd was firmly behind her rather than even Rhea. They liked Rhea. They treated her as a face, but the crowd was firmly behind EO, which they can do if they want to do. And I think the crowd might be that way right now anyway. It'd be an interesting dynamic, I'd say that. And then this week they gave her this big moment with all these people showing their reactions. Everybody's happy except Izzy. What the hell, Izzy? Izzy was not thrilled with EO winning the championship, but Izzy does as Izzy will do. And maybe Izzy will challenge for that championship in about 5 or 6 years time. So, we also had Casey Catanzaro versus Dakota Kai, 2:28. Not a lot to say here. Casey had new gear. It was kind of cool. But Kai goes over and then, makes her intentions known for the championship. I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of time to go, so this is probably a TV thing. I would prefer that this be a takeover thing, but I don't think it's going to last that long. I feel like they are going to go with maybe some rematches, or something of that nature. I don't know. But I'm very interested to find out. The only championship where I think the storytelling is as good as where the cruiserweights are is this one. So there you go. Kai goes over. I will say conspicuous by her absence this week was Tegan Nox, who probably needed a refresher more than Dakota Kai. Dakota took the pin at In Your House, but she still got a fully formed act. Meanwhile, Tegan won, but after all this time, we don't know who she is. We really don't know anything about her personality. We don't know what her goals are. We define her by her feuds, and with not capitalizing on the pin she scored at In Your House, I don't even know why the hell we should even be thinking about her, because it's frustrating how little they think they need to tell us about her. Tom?
Yeah, I'm going to need people to stop telling me that those NXT always in the front row fans aren't getting some kind of special treatment. There's no way to say it without sounding bitter. And as I always try to preface to dull the bitterness, they're all very nice people when I deal with them one-on-one, but they're always in the front row. The Golden Circle tickets are never available online, no matter how quickly you click the link. And, you know, I'm happy with where I sit, but it's different when you're one of the very first people in line at their performance center show, and then you get held back just so those people who are further back from you in line at this supposedly first come first serve, no Golden Circle show, so they can all sit up front. So then, you know, you see them featured all in this, Io Shirai video package, which, hey, if they had offered that to me, I would have said, no, I don't want to be, I don't need you looking at me on a webcam and reacting to an event. I just want to sit here and watch the event. And not worry about acting for you like you have your wrestlers doing now. I guess I am bitter about it, even though I'm trying to sound like I'm not. It's just these people are constantly saying, like, oh no, we're just like you, everything. But no, we see instances like this over and over again where there's clearly some sort of communication going on between them and WWE to give this to them. And, you know, to be fair, they do spend a lot of money going to the house shows and everything, so they get paid back at least in some respect. And if any of them are listening, I'm sorry. You probably hate me if you ever hear me talk about this. I like you one-on-one, but when you say that there is no special treatment going on, it's like, all right, come on. Apart from that, I thought this was an excellent video package because I was very much looking forward to seeing what Io Shirai was going to do immediately on the heels of her victory. And If you told me it was just going to be a video package, I would have been disappointed knowing that on paper. But it was good enough that I didn't mind that we didn't see her this week, and I'll look forward to seeing what she does next week. And I will say that during Charlotte Flair's multiple excellent performances on Raw, because Charlotte was so prominent on Raw in bookending segments and throughout, Io Shirai's name did get mentioned a number of times as somebody who had just won a match that had Charlotte Flair in it and now has the title that Charlotte just held. So that Io's stock is definitely on the rise. With the Rhea Robert Stone segment, all I can say is that I hope this is like when Vince threw Eric Bischoff in the garbage truck and we never see Robert Stone again. That would make me very happy. I would like to see, just fantasy booking here, I would like to see Rhea versus Io one-on-one, and Io wins clean, and we do a handshake finish. It could be one of those things where, like, Io's celebrating, and Rhea sort of, like, stands menacingly behind her, and you don't know what she's going to do, and she swivels Io around and gives her a firm handshake and you know, gives her that moment, and maybe that's the last time we see Rhea in NXT. I don't know. As for the match, it was clearly just there so Kai could establish her new finisher, which she didn't need, but so be it. She already had like two other things she was using as finishers. The chiropractor, I guess it's a little bit more of a babyface thing, but whatever. It's weird because the Tegan going over Kai at the pay-per-view made it seem like they were just going to continue to drag out this very cold feud, but now it seems like they're separating them more, getting Team Ninja going up against Kai and Gonzalez, and on the other side of it, Knox and Blackheart are going up against whoever's going to be the tag champs after Backlash. So that it seems like a separation there. And I guess Catanzaro looked a little rough around the edges here, but it's still a big improvement over where she was a year ago. And I will look forward to the inevitable tag match that comes out of this, just because Gonzalez and Catanzaro were, as I've mentioned many times, very frequent training partners with one another, along with Rhea Ripley in the PC. And when they would have matches together, they would always do the exact same spots, and it looked very practiced. So I will enjoy seeing them again and see what else they can do, because both of them have grown since that time, and I think they can pull off something different.
And we've seen Raquel get quite a bit better just on TV. It's rare. We don't see as often now somebody really going through a period of just getting better and better while they're on TV. I thought maybe they brought her up too quickly, but yeah, her last couple of matches, she's looked good. She started to look at home, which I think is the big thing. So yeah. I thought it was odd that, I still want to say Lacey Lane, Caden Carter came out and, they said, oh, and that's her partner, as if I was supposed to know this, but TV has never established that. So, I mean, they could have just had this essentially start them as partners, because TV has never established that those two are even running buddies, let alone actual tag team partners. I thought that was odd. Otherwise, hey, give them something to do. I like it. Nate?
Yeah, that was weird for me, too. And I thought I missed something. So I'm glad you said that, because I didn't remember Caden Carter ever brushing elbows with Casey. Period. So that definitely seemed odd to me. And I, you know what? I mean, if that's the story they're going to tell, the story they're going to tell. But yeah, I mean, I wish maybe this was just kind of like the beginning of that story tonight or something along those lines. As far as the match went, it was what it was for, you know, as short as it was. I definitely like seeing Casey Catanzaro out there. Something about her I really enjoy. Yes, she's still got a little bit of work to do, but it, as Tom said, vast improvement over, where she was, you know, a year and a half ago. But I think it's just the fact that, you know, she's where she is so small and she can do all these, you know, those unique kind of ninja warrior type moves and mixes that in. I always just kind of wonder what is she going to do? What is she going to do? So, you know, I always like seeing her on TV, even if it was in a role like this, where I knew as soon as Dakota Kai came out, she was going to lose, Casey was going to lose. I knew it was going to be a relatively short match. I was right. But for what it was, it wasn't bad at all. I am really, really digging Raina, Raquel Gonzalez and everything she's doing as Kai's heater right now. Again, a vast improvement over, I mean, even, you know, like you just said, where she came in on, a handful of months ago now. Vast improvement. You know, I get, and I mean this in the best way possible. I get China vibes from her, except I feel like she can work. She's just got this, you know, really imposing presence about her. The fact that she is, I think she's 6 feet exactly, if I'm not mistaken. She's towering over the other women in the ring, and it reminds me a lot of China. Just like I said, somebody can actually work. A big thumbs up there. With we were talking on Wrestling Night in America about, you know, what's going on with Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai, and I did think that, you know, like Tom said, we both thought that after that pinfall I had in your house, they were going to kind of continue on with this feud, and I don't think if they do, I think they might come back to it in a couple of weeks, but it kind of seems like they are separating a little bit with what everything went down tonight. I think I'm okay with that. Is like when they started this feud, I was really, really looking forward to it. I was really all about it. And then it kind of did, it started to cool off. Fans just didn't really seem to be as invested in it as I thought they probably should have been. And it did. It just kind of seemed to cool down from there. So maybe it is time to get them apart from one another, have them do different things. They can always come back to it down the road. Hopefully after they establish Tegan Nox a little bit more. I know some we bring up all the time, and, you know, they've tried with a couple of those different video documentaries and things on social media. But we still don't really have any definitive idea of who Tegan Nox is. And I think it's really hard for a lot of people to get behind her and actually care without getting a little bit more out of that. And then I'll end with the Io Shirai video package. I can't really say too much more about it than what you guys did. I loved it. I love the fact that she is the champ right now. The finish of the match the other night was certainly not the way I would have liked for it to go. I think I would have liked to see her get more of a decisive win. However, as you told us, that Triple H said on the call after in your house, there is a heavy storyline that is going to be coming out of this, and to trust him. So I'm gonna, and I'm Trips, keep me make me proud, do something good.
All right, well, Darrell, did you have anything more for us?
Okay, and yes, Raina Gonzalez, the person who Nia Jax, she's probably who everything they wanted Nia Jax to be, because she's big, intimidating, got a presence, and she's safe. So if she continues to keep going the way that she is, and hope with that Tegan Nox story, when her and Shotzi Blackheart win the NXT, not NXT, but win the Women's Tag Team title match next week, and bring that back, and then you can build a feud between them two versus Raina Gonzalez and Dakota Kai, and you have those two feud over that title, and maybe they'll build a story with Tegan Nox. So hopefully we get that, and that's a big thing that Triple H is talking about. But other than that, this whole show was good. Everything was great. I love everything. Has a potential to be great. Want to see where all these storylines end up at. We have 10 weeks until the next NXT takeover, so they got a lot of building to do, and they can blow off a few feuds and stuff like that. So I want to see where they go. But thank you guys, and y'all have a great rest of the show. I'll be listening in.
Absolutely. Thanks as always, Ro.
Have a good one, dude.
Okay, so let's go to our mid-show main event. That was Finn Balor versus Cameron Grimes. This went 12:32. It was the longest match of the night by 13 seconds. This was all set up. This was announced earlier that this rematch was going to be today. Damian Priest came in on a Grimes interview. Grimes said, hey, I was just saying how good you were. I mean, you didn't win. You didn't beat Finn Balor, but you were good. Priest lays out Damian Grimes. Is it a face turn for Damian Priest? I don't know, but I think his act is not one that has to change for him. For him to turn face, he just has to be booked against heels. He can do what he's doing almost entirely and still be a baby face. So maybe. So anyway, we had the Priest and Grimes scene there. Grimes trying to get out of this match by claiming a neck. Did he say neck? I don't remember. An injury to Drake Works.
Broken jaw.
Broken jaw. Yes, that's right. And then he was macking on some PC talent outside. I'm sure Tom knows who they are, but I don't. He can tell me in a moment. And then we got Regal on a Zoom call. It was nice to see Regal in the mix, even though he's still not there. And Regal, of course, demands that Grimes gets into the match. Grimes loses to Balor. Not such a bad deal. Hopefully this doesn't mean that Grimes just disappears from TV for another few weeks, as he almost always does after he loses a match. So on the Grimes saga and the mid-show main event, Tom.
Rita Reyes and Brianna Brandy. And I guess I could be convinced to feel like this is a natural place that they might be in if they are heterosexual and interested in Grimes, then they're working in the same place as him and it makes sense. But since they were not acknowledged and they were just framed as floozies who were interested in hearing him talk himself up, it just seemed it in the moment, it irked me even more than seeing them behind the plexiglass, watering down their star potential. I've never even seen either of these women work a match. I just know that they're signed. And so I've been trying to pay attention to them. I try to do that, although, you know, they sign enough like NFL bench warmers that it gets tough when it gets to these like obligatory big dudes. But, Rita Reyes and Brianna Brandy, I am aware of them. I don't know if these are stars in the making for sure, but I know that WWE is paying them to maybe become stars someday. It's not unprecedented on NXT to see people used like this, and it's just frustrating. As for the match, all I have is I don't know why Cameron Grimes couldn't just keep his win. I don't know why, if they felt the need for Finn Balor to have a crossover segment match to go over somebody so he could challenge Lee afterwards, why it couldn't have been like Bronson Reed or somebody. I don't need to see Cameron Grimes taking this loss.
And if the thing was, like, not only did I not want to just because I love Grimes, but this win for him to brag about could have been something that he'd do for a really long time, a tiresomely long time. And then finally it comes back to it much later down the road. And they just, it feels like that's just kind of a squandered thing. Seems like every time he steps up, he gets stepped on, which reminds me of one Finn Balor, to be honest. So there you go. That was the mid-show main event, 12:32. Balor over Grimes, Nate.
So kind of starting with the whole Grimes saga, I really liked the character building there, kind of showing that Grimes is kind of this weaselly character, which we knew anyway, but just, you know, reiterating it, which was great. Backstage with the two women, I figured that they were performance center anyway, because, there aren't really actually fans there right now. So that was what really kind of threw me at that point. It's like, are we supposed to just think that there are these two women there that are groupies or that are fans in attendance, because there isn't an audience. They're an employed audience right now.
They've brought in people in the meantime to play secure. Like, we saw Jason Cade was playing
right.
Security guard or something like that. We had the Uber driver on Takeover. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like they could have brought somebody else in. I mean, hell, maybe it was a last minute thing and they happened to be there. I mean, you know, who knows? But no, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, they could have either done it better or you know, use somebody else so they didn't, you know, potentially, you know, kind of drain that potential star power that, you know, that you're just talking about.
And the women like aren't even thinking about that in the moment because it's like, oh, TV time,
TV time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, you know, and that I mean, that's something we hear all the time. I mean, matter of fact, you know, I was listening. I think the podcast is a few weeks old now, but I mean, I was listening to a podcast today. You know, it was something to wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. It was all on Hornswoggle, and they were talking about all of the crazy things that Hornswoggle has done over the years. And you know, and Dylan, the man who played Hornswoggle, he just was like, "It's TV time." I know they're making fun of me. I know they're poking fun at me, but I don't care, and it's TV time. So, I mean, maybe that's the attitude they have. I'm sure that's the attitude that they have. But, you know, I do worry that it, you know, some exposure like that could define them down, depending on when we actually do see them on TV. I mean, if it's a year down the road, nobody's going to remember it. But if it's like 2 weeks down the road, yeah, maybe we will. But also really, really glad to see Regal back on TV, even if it was on an iPad. I'm a massive William Regal fan, and I've definitely missed seeing him on TV in this whole pandemic era. So glad to see that he got a little bit of time there tonight. The match itself, I did enjoy the match. I'm right there with you guys. I don't understand why Grimes just didn't either, you know, why Grimes didn't keep his win or, you know, go over again tonight. Or if, you know, they needed Balor, like you said, Balor to go over somebody to challenge Keith Lee, you know, could have been somebody. Bronson Reed, I think, is a perfect example there, perfect choice. You know, somebody like that. Maybe even Dominik Dijakovic, you know, if they wanted somebody with more of a name value. Because, you know, right now he's not doing anything. But instead it was Grimes, and I feel like Grimes could have really used that win. And I really like that idea that you just had about him kind of, you know, like, I beat the Universal Champion and, you know, all this stuff, and using that as like this talking point for, you know, months and months and months until he finally gets his comeuppance or what have you. So, you know, that, I think really that is my, that was my biggest takeaway from this, is just that I did not agree with the finish and who actually went over. Although the match itself, I enjoyed it. You know, I like Finn Balor. I know, you know, we've talked about in the past. You know, he kind of goes to that same Finn Balor arsenal, which, you know, I'm glad he did not do it in your house tonight. He kind of did a little bit, but still, I feel like, just because I like Cameron Grimes so much as well, and Cameron Grimes' style, I personally enjoyed the match. So I just didn't like the finish. I wish Grimes kept his win.
Okay, so is your name Mike? If so, this week you had to do a job to Induce Share. Induce Share goes over Mikey Delbury and Mike Reed in 105. My wife was watching with me at this point. She knows I really like Induce Share. She saw the entrance, which is so big and intense and foreboding, and they hadn't said anything about the opponents. They show the opponents on the screen, this close-up, these two tiny little guys, and their names are just lamely there on the bottom, and they don't even get spoken. And my wife just busted up. She just totally busted up at this. But yeah, that was not a whole lot to say about the match. I liked it. I like seeing Induce Share do this. I could see them do this for many, many months, to be honest. But in 105, they go over, well, Mikey Delbury was the only one who was legal, and they pinned him after their finisher, which I don't know how to call yet because I don't think it has a name. JB emails us, it's being reported that Malcolm Bivens' Induce Share team were supposed to feud with Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne for the NXT tag titles, but Fightful reports that they were pulled from TV when it became clear Riddle would have to drop the belts. WWE officials didn't think Induce Share was ready for that spot. What are your thoughts on this? I know that Kelly in particular is high on Bivens and Induce Share. How would the Broserweights and Induce Share feud have looked? Do you guys think that Induce Share would have been a better option to take the belts rather than Imperium? Where does Induce Share go from here? As always, love the show. These are great questions. Were they a better option to take the titles? That's yes and no. Imperium is going to have the more historically tag team championship matches in NXT have been a big, big deal. It's a lot. There's always been either a strong division or at least two strong teams, which sometimes is all it takes to convince people there's a good division. So for, I think Indusher should not have been brought to TV until they felt that they were ready to win the titles. I think that monster teams should win titles immediately, because otherwise they end up being defined down. The monsters who don't immediately win and dominate the entire division, to me, are problematic. I thought that it was a massive mistake to keep Braun Strowman away from championships for so long. And he only won one because of necessity. I thought that it was ridiculous that if they were going to, I don't think Braun's all that, really, but I think if they were going to try to get anything out of him, they should have done it right away. So was Indusher ready? I don't know. But if they're not ready, don't bring them to TV. I really think they should have won the championships right away. And I think it looks very silly that they were up there challenging the champions. They went away for 4 weeks for no reason, with no explanation, kayfabe. And then they came back and they're not, they just looked into the ring. That was it. I don't know what that feud would have looked like. I think it would have been a mistake to put them in this feud and have them lose it. I think that would have been real problematic for a team that really gets by on being monsters. A lot of teams can go out there and lose that first time, that multiple times, and then win. That's how you book somebody like Drake Maverick, like Sami Zayn. It's not really how you should book an act like Indusher. Tom?
Yeah, and I think it's so funny how they wanted to keep using Braun as an attraction and not have to end up beating him to get a title off of him. But they so desperately wanted the visual of a title belt in his hands that just for one night only, they gave the a title belt to the winner of the Greatest Royal Rumble so they could get the photograph of him holding a title above his head.
Right. terrible.
So bad.
Terrible.
This was the one thing on the show that I actually liked. And my only nitpick is that I don't want them to do the Viking Raiders forearm smash. Their entrance is perfect. And I love it when they coldly, menacingly stare forward at the battleground that they are about to create carnage in. I buy into it. And I don't need them doing the Viking Raiders forearm smash, but everything else is working. I would not have argued with them winning the titles sooner, but I really like the idea of building them up with squashes first. And it's funny, you mentioned your wife's comments on it. My daughter happened to be watching this along with me, and she looked at the job team and said, "Daddy, are they real wrestlers?" which led me to explaining to her the concept of enhancement matches, which even then talked myself in more to liking the idea behind this, because the way that I framed it to her was that either the promotion or the team's manager wants this dominant team, this very strong team, to go up against teams that are not going to be competition for them, so they can be built up to look really dominant. If they come in with a lot of potential, like Indusher, and they immediately start going 50-50 with bigger teams, then that may define them down out of the gate. And that, you know, that water may not hold all the way as we continue to explain it out. But explaining it to my daughter, I was like, oh, yeah, I think I talked myself into liking this squash even more than I already did. So, thumbs up.
Yeah, and the exact thing I'm talking about is what they're doing with Karrion Kross. Like, they had him destroy, and we predicted that. Did I predict that with you guys or on the Blake and Sal show? It was one or the other.
I think it was both.
It might have been both. I was definitely saying that this would probably be a short match. That's what I think Indusher maybe should have done. But all that said, I think they're still in a great place. I think they're going to be in a fine place. The only problem is the champions are heels. I'm going to throw one other part of this in there, Nate, as I throw to you. Breezango had their vignette, and they want to face Emporium, Fabio and Marsupial. So, yeah, this seems like a lot of effort to put into a one-week feud that will probably end with them not winning. But on the other hand, they put so much into it, I'm not so sure anymore. So, yeah, they were they said – I really liked how they said, you know, we were very silly, and I think we got caught up too much in the entertainment. And then immediately after that, they started saying Emporium, Fabio, and Marsupial, which I think is some pretty funny lack of self-awareness. So since we brought up Imperium, I thought I'd bring that up. So anything on the IndyShare Act, and if you want to throw in on Breezango, and then we'll ask Tom if he has any feelings on that scene as well.
I'll start with Breezango just because, man, I loved that. I love that video package. So their humor just reminds me of the humor that, like, me and my friends have. And it's stupid, but I love it. And it's amazing. Breezango has this chemistry both in the ring and out of the ring where yes, you know, they're kind of an enhancement team, and I really don't necessarily see them winning for, beating Imperium, unless the plan is to have them beat Imperium and then drop the belts to IndyShare, which I could certainly see happening. But then there's also this part of me too, that really wants Imperium to have like a strong run, because like, I really like what Imperium's all about, you know, just like pure wrestling and they're just their message. I like what they're about. So I'd like to see them have a strong title reign. However, at the same time, I also really like IndyShare, and I 100% agree with everything that you guys were just talking about, with having monster tag teams come in, win belts, monsters in general come in, win belts, squash everybody. And I mean, that's how you kind of build a credible heel, or even just a credible monster for that matter. They don't necessarily need to touch the titles later on. I mean, you know, you think of like The Undertaker and things like that. I mean, later on in his career, he didn't need the belt. And, I think he had a world heavyweight championship run like 2008, 2009, something like that. But like, other than that, he really hadn't touched the title scene. That's Taker obviously being an extreme example, because I mean, Taker I think is kind of in a class of his own in some respects. But was the first example that came to my mind. But I feel like, you know, having them come in, I would have liked to kind of see what they would have done with IndyShare, did with the Broserweights. But at the same time, it's like, I almost feel like they would have had to come in and squash the Broserweights in order to kind of keep the mystique that they were building. They kind of went back to tonight. And I don't think you would have wanted to have them come in and squash both Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne, who, you know, are arguably, you know, some of the better, singles talent that they have. Matt Riddle, obviously, you know, I believe he's going to be getting called up if the rumors are true. But you know, Pete Dunne, I feel like he's going to probably be sticking around in NXT for a little while, which is fine by me. I don't really think you would have wanted to have IndyShare come in and just squash them and win the belts. So I don't really know how that would have looked. And I feel like any way that they could have went would have defined either IndyShare down a little bit or defined the Broserweights down a little bit. So in a way, maybe, you know, what happened was for the best. We'll obviously see. But I am really high on them. I really like what IndyShare, just that their presence, the fact that they, you know, and I've said this before, they kind of give me almost like a Head Shrinkers type of a vibe, just brutal, like they're out for blood type of a tag team. But then, you know, behind the scenes, they're wearing suits, or in the backstage, they get the suits on, they're speaking the native language. It's kind of like this modern AOP vibe that AOP was doing up until recently. I haven't really watched Raw in the past maybe month or so, so I don't know if they're still doing it, but you know what I mean? So I, you know, I'm really, really high on them. I would love to see them win the NXT titles. It, like I said, the only thing I can think of if to get the titles on them soon is to have Breezango go over Imperium and have Indu Share just squash the hell out of Breezango. Makes sense, but I don't know. We'll see. It would be cool to see the NXT gold on Breezango for at least a few weeks anyway.
Tom, was there anything else on the Breezango situation?
It was counteractive. The point of the segment was to frame them as a more serious team than they usually let on. And since returning to NXT, they have done enough to present them to separate themselves from their Fashion Police era. So simply reminding us that it existed and showing Breeze in a fake mustache and all these goofy replays, just reminded us that there was a time where they could not be taken seriously at all, entertaining though those segments were. So I thought that it defeated its own conceit.
It was odd because they haven't done all that stuff, and then to build up this match,
that is true,
brought it into but whatever. It was I thought it was an okay segment in a vacuum. You didn't think about the fact that they were putting all that stuff front and center. I also thought it was amusing that he said this guy wrestled his debut match in front of 80,000 people at WrestleMania and he won. And then, you know, you got a couple of shots of Fandango, but you didn't. And there was a time where they would have taken that shot. They would have said, look who he beat. But they didn't. They didn't do that. All right, I got two emails, and the one other segment that there was Timothy Thatcher. He's going to have a seminar on brutality or some such. I'm cautiously optimistic about this. I'm looking forward to seeing him just destroy people for fun backstage like that, like he's just living life. I'm actually kind of looking forward to that. Walter did that for a while towards the beginning of his reign, and it was fun stuff. Let's talk emails because we have two more. This is from Jack Argyle. Hey guys, hope you're all doing great. Though it was a great takeover on the weekend. Thought it was a great takeover on the weekend. Really enjoyed it top to bottom. My question today is something I've been thinking about for the past year. When the heck is Triple H going to start running all shows? This past few years, seeing the feuds and matches under Triple H's watch, I've been anxiously waiting for Vince to say Hunter will be taking over for him and thought we were going to get it on the 25th anniversary show for Triple H on SmackDown. Do you think we'd get a big announcement on a show, or would it be a quiet passing over of the company? Or are we going to be stuck with Vince in charge until his last days on planet Earth? I just think the whole company would be a lot more enjoyable than it already is, and I'm sure there would be a lot happier wrestlers on the main roster. Thanks for all you do, guys. Love the show. P.S. Kelly, 1 week ago today, the Premier League's 1 week today until the Premier League starts. It's like counting down to Christmas in the UK. Yeah, looking forward to that. We already know who the champs are going to be because Liverpool is so far ahead. But we don't know who's going to get relegated. And that Champions League watch is interesting. So, will there be a big announcement? That's a good question. And that is going to test Vince's lack of desire to make a big to-do about him losing power versus him wanting to have a show that celebrates him as like the hero of all professional wrestling history. I would not be surprised either way. And I would also not be surprised if he holds on to it until he drops dead. I don't know. I certainly think that storytelling would be better off. I mean, Triple H can be in all places and all and do all things, but he can certainly push things in a better direction. And right now, yes, Raw and SmackDown do better ratings, but like at this point in wrestling history, the draw is so much the brands. It's just the brands. And these brands really could be better off if they had better, more cogent storytelling. I think that's all I got to say about it, Tom.
Yeah, ever since NXT hit USA, Triple H's responsibilities have been that much more pulled in that direction. And however much it may have affected things, he recently lost his Kevin Dunn. I always forget what the guy's name was, but Triple H's Kevin Dunn is no longer with the company. So, you know, I'm not sure how much more responsibility that creates for Triple H. I'm sure he's just been replaced. We had those snap zooms that you were moaning, very, very justified in bemoaning, Kelly. I think Kevin Dunn may have popped over to Full Sail after that happened. But and on the other side of it, even though Bruce Pritchard and Paul Heyman have more of a say in Raw and SmackDown now, and Vince is not physically at all of the tapings anymore, it doesn't seem like he's slowing down all that much. It still seems like he is extremely involved and moving and shaking in ways that, yeah, sure, ethically we may not agree with, but it does seem like he's still making power plays. So at this point, it does still seem like it's something that he's going to do into his grave. And even though as a character, Vince is absolutely the first person who's going to, you know, put a pie in his face and make himself out to be a fool as a payoff. And so at a certain time, I absolutely would have seen this brought into a storyline. Now he looks like a cadaver. And I don't think that there's a reality where we see this Vince do that kind of thing on TV anymore.
Yeah, we know that he has stayed off TV because he doesn't want to be seen that way, which I think is unfortunate. But a lot of people make that decision. Connery did that. A lot of actors have done that. They didn't want to get to a ripe old age on TV. But we'll see. Nate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously anything I say is going to be pure speculation. I think you guys pretty much touched on anything I would have said. I think absolutely storytelling would be better if Triple H kind of did have a more of a hand in everything. But, you know, obviously with everything with the USA Network and NXT, I don't know if that's necessarily feasible. I don't know what his workload is. I don't have access to his Outlook calendar every day. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if he'd be able to actually make that work or not, but I think the storytelling would overall be a lot better, and there would be a lot more your congruency from episode to episode. I don't think if Vince was to turn over the reins before he dies, and I don't think that's going to happen, but if he did, I really don't think there would be a big to do about it. Everything that I've heard about Vince as Vince the man himself, he doesn't like to give himself the spotlight. You know, he doesn't like, you know, so I don't think he would. I don't think there would be like this big to do on TV or this big announcement. There might be like a corporate announcement, sure, but I don't think there would be like a, you know, big to do on TV ceremony or anything like that. If it was like the height of the McMahon Helmsley era, you know, in the Attitude era, sure, definitely. But today, no, I don't think so. I don't think at all. I think it would be a quiet transition over. But in reality, I think Vince is going to try and run the company until the day he drops dead.
Okay, we got one more email. This is from Paul Robinson. Hi guys, just wondering if you have any insight into why the nationality makeup differs so much between the male and female rosters. It struck me during In Your House that of the women who are mainly featured on NXT and are pushed, a lot are non-American. Shirai, Ripley, Knox, Kai, Green, and Lee, with Kaylee Ray and Toni Storm also being featured strongly before Corona. Only LeRae, Yim, and Blackheart are American, which seems low. In contrast, for the men, you have Cole, Strong and Fish, Dream, Gargano, Ciampa, Cross, Lee, Thatcher, Dijakovic, Priest, Grimes, Loomis, Strickland, and Atlas, all from the U.S., with only Balor, O'Reilly, Kushida, and Dunn from outside until Maverick and Phantasma came in recently. Is it something to do with the relative strengths of the wrestling scenes, the NXT scouting system not looking too far beyond PWG and Evolve for men, or something else? Also, Balor seems to be the main candidate to take on Cole after probably a mini feud with Loomis if he wins the title again. Could you see them doing a title versus title match with Walter at NXT UK Dublin in October? And who would you like to see take on Jordan Devlin with the right opponent? The roof would come off. See his matches in Dublin with Walter and David Starr for proof. I think him versus Bate or Dragunov could be sensational. Keep up the good work. Paul in Staffordshire, England. It's interesting that men and women breakdown, how that works. Also interesting that I had forgotten that O'Reilly is not from here. He's not, but I had forgotten that. Obviously we were wrong about, I was wrong too about Balor being the one to take on Cole.
I know he had his TV main event early in the USA era, but yeah, he's apparently not the next one. NXT UK of Dublin in October. Hopefully it'll happen. The July NXT UK tapings were just canceled. So it's going to be at least another set of tapings, another 4 or 5 weeks of TV that we've lost. How much are they going to be able to build this up? They had a show largely built. By the way, you really made me miss Ilya Dragunov too. I had kind of forgotten how much I miss him. And Bate is probably my favorite wrestler. So, interesting question. I know that they're looking everywhere. Somebody asked Triple H on one of the two media calls I just did. I can't remember which anymore. We have so many international talents in NXT, and obviously he had nothing further to say. I don't care where anybody's from. I just want the best workers here, and they come from everywhere. So of course, if you open up the rules to be everywhere, then you're going to get the best talent in the world. But that breakdown is interesting, and the one who follows personnel here the most is Tom. So I'm hoping that he can do better than sputtering and saying, I don't know, man.
Yeah, and I actually don't have a very clean answer for it. All I can really say for sure is that it definitely isn't some sort of bias when it comes to international signings. Like, just for example, the most recent Shanghai tryout resulted in 4 signings, 3 of whom are male. So it's not like they're signing more women than they are men from situations like that. I wonder if it is, it's, again, it's not a clean answer at all, but if it is just having to do with the fact that men get so much more TV time, and there is perhaps an unconscious bias in both which wrestlers we tune in more to see and which wrestlers they want to frame as stars, where you have, women, if you are a woman, you are already part of a minority based on your gender, or minority isn't the term I'm looking for, but that's already considered a part of the act, is that you are a woman, as much as I wish that wasn't the case. And like I said earlier, proponent for intergender wrestling and all of that, but that is the reality of it and how it can be viewed and how it can be viewed by an audience. So however that ends up panning out in the numbers, it probably just skews more toward Americans for the gender that takes up the most TV time in a predominantly American viewed product, if that makes sense. Again, not a clean answer at all, not an answer I'm confident in, but that's the best I got. As for Devlin, Kelly, you really sold me on the Money in the Bank-esque idea earlier. For me, I was just thinking with Escobar being heel, I don't want him to lose that interim title before Devlin shows back up. And even though if anybody can do it, Devlin can, he could absolutely just frame himself as the snivelly heel he's always been, with video packages or just one promo or whatever. But the fact is, he is going to be warmly received upon a return, as anyone is after a time away, no matter how dastardly they are. So I say, just go ahead and lean into that and let him be a babyface for that first match back. He can lose, and then he can have sour grapes or whatever it may be and go right back to being the Devlin that he was before, whether on NXT US or UK. As for people in this division I'd like to see him feud with, I mean, it's the one that we've been talking about. It's Kushida. But I guess that's that. I think that they should just go ahead and let him be a babyface for the first match back.
And that is a lovely wrestling trick with a long history. When you know that somebody's got to work heel for all the storyline reasons that they have, but they are going to get that response on NXT UK a handful of months ago, probably more than a handful now. They did that with Noam Dar when he showed up. He had been really, really shining as a heel on 205. And he went there, and of course, he
He goes to the UK, he gets cheered. They weren't expecting him. He showed up. He worked face for 1 week or maybe two, like one mini feud. And then he settled into the Dar that he is. And I think it was even over the course of one taping, because you can do it in one taping because you're coming to the ring for the third time. You're not getting the return pop. And then he could just go back to who he was. Yeah, I tried to rack my brain for reasons this might happen, and one of the only things I can think of that would be an old-timey wrestling answer is that the men typically are in the main event, like still even now, a lot more likely to be in the main event, so they need to do a lot of the heavy lifting for selling the main event and giving interviews, and maybe you care a little bit less if the top people in other divisions can't give interviews. And that includes tag team, that includes cruiserweight, that includes every other championship. So if there's a language barrier, you prefer not to have it in your main event scene. I don't know, but I know that is something that the Vinces and the Bischoffs of old would definitely have promoted as a truth of wrestling. And it's true that it's easier if you speak the same language as the predominant audience. But I think it matters a lot less now than it ever did. Nate.
Hey, I got to do it at least once an episode, don't I?
Yes.
Yep. So as far as the question goes about the racial differences between the men and the women, I couldn't even really begin to speculate on why that is. So I'm not gonna. I don't know if it's just kind of the way the cards fell, and that's just kind of how it is right now, or if there is more to it than that. I don't know enough to speak intelligently to it, so I'm gonna just leave it at what you guys said and go from there. The cruiserweights, I. You also sold me on that idea of kind of like a Money in the Bank type of a thing with Devlin. I think that's a fantastic idea. I my mind kind of started running with that a little bit. I don't know, exactly. I guess it really depends on when Devlin is going to be kind of slotted back into the picture. I know earlier tonight, Darrell said something about UK travel being open up soon, but my CEO said something to me today about UK travel not being opening up until like the end of the year. So I'm not really sure. My company has a UK office, and we're actually trying to get a couple people over there for training. So I'm actively trying to like figure out when this whole UK ban is getting lifted. So if it is getting lifted soon and Devlin can come over here soon, I kind of like the idea Tom was just talking about and kind of let him lean into the babyface role, go up against Escobar and, kind of go from there. But I don't, with that little variable of I don't know when he's actually going to be able to come back to the States. It's kind of hard to say. It's kind of hard to say. 'Cause it's like if it is, 3-4 months down the line, the landscape of cruiserweight division could be completely different by then.
Right. And hopefully they know enough that they can have the right talent holding the championship at the time. I even think it would be kind of funny if at the beginning of a show that's going to have a major cruiserweight championship match on it, he shows up as he's been doing and says, I'm going to be watching very closely because when I finally make it back to the States, I'm going to be challenging the winner. But he's not back at home. He has already made it here, and he shows up at the end of the match to steal it when they've just established that he's not even in the country. But we'll see. We'll see how well they like it after they hear me speaking. So that is our show. I am Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. Email us, PWTorch. I don't know what this show is. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. That's what this is. 515-605-9345. Tom, who are you?
At Tom Stout, and I will now proceed to kick myself for how hard I went in on the NXT front row folks, even though I told myself I wasn't going to, until next week's show when I say something else to kick myself for a week over.
Right. for a bit, I was like, he doesn't even remember what the question was. But you got back to it. You got back to it. Nate, who are you?
I am at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses. You guys should see dropping on the site on Friday. And, yeah, that's me.
Shut up, Nate. All right. We'll see you next week. Cheers.